If you could spend a moment with some remarkable people and discover what their life sounds like, what would you ask? Welcome to Are We On Air? An audio encounter. I'm Armand Nafei, and each episode will feature one conversation with an inspiring friend of mine who will share with us the soundtrack to their life. What up, and welcome back to another wonderful episode of Are We On Air? This week's guest has been on top of my wish list since day one, but we kept missing each other. First in New York City, then in Berlin, right after his wonderful exhibition at Koenig Gallery. And this time around, I managed to catch him just before he was jumping on another plane in London town. He's one of the key multi-talented individuals of today. An artist, a designer, a creative director, a corporation, and a Pokemon enthusiast. His name is Daniel Arsham. Danny and I met at his studio in London, where he was just working on his new clothing line that literally just dropped. But we chatted about, well, you guessed it, his life soundtrack, and covered everything from his early hip-hop roots with A Tribe Called Quest all the way to today, where he did the cover of Gunna's album DS Forever. But we also touched on how he, among his friend, the late Virgil Abloh, became one of the faces of this generation of creatives that work with all kinds of mediums and within all kinds of worlds, and literally merging them. Very fascinating. We also touched on his art and his creative process and the role that Pokemon plays in his life. From Kate Bush to Star Wars, we got it all. Now, if you haven't already, then do leave us a lovely review, 5 stars or just plain kisses, whatever you feel like, on the Apple and Spotify app, or just come say hi on our Instagram account. If you want to listen to all the wonderful music and stories, then you can, of course, find them at areweonair.com and on all podcasts and Spotify and Apples of the world. Now, so welcome to Are We On Air, Daniel.
Thank you so much.
It's a pleasure to have you on the show, finally. I guess it's been a long time coming. You were on top of my list, my wish list, since we started this little podcast 2 years ago. As we just mentioned, we have a lot of friends in common, and we already had some of your friends on the show as well. And what I love about your world and your work is how there are so many crossovers and touch points. And I think music also plays a role in that. But the concept of this interview series is to kind of paint a picture of who you are through a couple of songs.
Okay.
And create a timeline. And why don't we start with, what was the earliest significant musical memory that shaped you as an artist?
You know, I grew up in the 80s and 90s, and I think early hip hop, you know, I think the first concert that I ever went to was a Tribe Called Quest concert, you know, in Miami in like probably 1994, 1995, maybe.
At the peak, really.
At the peak, yeah.
Wow.
Well, that was the era.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. Do you remember a particular track that of that show that got you that,
I mean,
you wanted to play?
You know, Midnight Marauders, that album, I could still go back to that now. And everything from like the intro with like this voice that comes in and says, you know, it's like your guide through, I can't remember exactly what it was.
Hello, this is your Midnight Marauder program. I'm on the front of your cover. I will be enhancing your cassettes and CDs with certain facts that you may find beneficial. The average bounce meter for your Midnight Marauder program will be in the area of 95 BPMs. We hope that you will find our presentation precise, bass heavy, and just right. Thanks.
And even the graphics of like the cover and like that kind of hand-painted black and green and red cover still does evoke some memories.
We
be sublime. It's enjoyable to know you and the concubines. Niggas, take off your coats. Ladies, act like gems. Sit down. Indian styles, we recite these hymns. See, lyrically, I'm Mario Andretti on the Momo. Ludicrously speedy or infectious with the slow-mo. Heard me in the 80s, JV's on the promo. Am I never in the quest to get the paper on the caper? But now, let me take it to the queen side. I'm taking it to Brooklyn side. All the residential questions to invade the air. Hold up a second, son, because we almost...
And I know it's very difficult, but how would you describe yourself with three songs?
I mean, there'd probably be a Bob Marley song in there somewhere. Doesn't really matter which one it is.
And how then, come?
I don't know. I grew up like, you know, in Florida, in Miami, and that is kind of the soundtrack of my youth. Mm-hmm. You know, my parents were fans of that. It feels like home somehow, that music, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know, being out on the water. I grew up like very much on the ocean and on the beach. So that soundtrack very much fits with that universe. And then I think on the newer front, there would probably be some, I just worked with Gunna.
All right.
On his album cover and like, I don't know, something from that album. Again, I don't know which track, maybe like Pushin' P or something like that.
Pushin' P, yeah, Pushin' P, turn me up, P. Pointers in the paddock in my piece, I'm Pushin' P. Cop new helmets for my peace. We don't want no peace. Got a spot at cross spot, just for peace. Drop the data, now we plotting exotic peas. She not a lesbian for peace, she turned pesbian. Push a P, I'm push a P. I'm capital P, I write the president, count presidents. Push a P. Portuguese on her knees, mopping down a P. She let me squeeze and she leave, cause she keep a P. Private suite, private seat, bitch, I'm pushing P. Purple paint, pussy pink, bitch, I'm pushing P. Push a P, I'm pushing P. Push a P, I'm pushing P. Yeah. Push a P, I'm pushing P. Push a P, I'm pushing P. Yeah.
And then some track from the 90s, like a, maybe like a Nas track, late nice. 90s from Illmatic or something like that.
Rappers are monkey flipping with the funky rhythm. I be kicking, musician, inflicting composition of pain. I'm like Scarface, sniffing cocaine, holding an M16. See, with the pen, I'm extreme. Now, bullet holes left in my peepholes. I'm suited up with street clothes. Hand me a 9 and out, the feet froze. Y'all know my steelo, with or without the airplay. I keep some E and J, sitting bent up in the stairway. Or either on the corner, betting grants with the CeeLo champs. Laughing at bass heads, trying to sell some broken amps. G-packs get off quick forever. My niggas talk shit, reminiscing about the last time the task force flipped. Niggas be running through the block shooting. Time to start the revolution. Catch a body head for Houston once they caught us off guard. The Mac-10 was in the ground.
We love. When you're in your studio creating and working, do you have music playing? Do you have like a playlist? Does sometimes maybe a song directly influence a piece? Or,
you know, I work with quite a large staff. So there's about 30 of us in New York, and it's a big open studio. And I am typically not the one controlling the music. It's sort of whoever gets there first that day that,
like that
jumps on the Bluetooth and putting it on. And it's a pretty eclectic mix, I think, as well, you know, from different backgrounds and tastes of music.
Could that have also maybe a negative effect then when you're working, or it just, you already come in into the studio, you already know what you're doing anyway, and this is a process now?
I've always worked with music, even going back to high school, making drawings in my bedroom, you know, listening to, you know, Biggie on vinyl, oh, right, wow, in 1998.
That's the way to do it. Favorite Biggie track?
Probably Juicy. Yeah, obvious, but also, yeah, I don't know, classic.
You it's
know?
So strong. Yeah. It's timeless. Yeah. Yeah.
Genesis. When I was dead broke, man, I couldn't picture this. 50-inch screen, money green, leather sofa. Got two rides, a limousine with the chauffeur. Phone bill about 2 G's flat. No need to worry, my accountant handles that. And my whole crew is lounging, celebrating every day, no more public housing. Thinking back on my one-room shack. Now my mom pimps a act with minks on her back. And she loves to show me off, of course. Smiles every time my face is up in the sauce. We used to fuss when the landlord dissed us. No heat, wonder why Christmas missed us. Birthdays was the worst days. Now we sip champagne when we thirsty. Damn right I like the life I live. Cause I went from negative to positive. And it's all. And if you don't know, now you know, nigga.
As an artist, as you are, how does one adapt to the zeitgeist without losing and changing their DNA in any field? But
I just make things that I want to see exist in the world. And often that does tap into kind of an existing mood, right? I don't necessarily try to think about the zeitgeist. It sort of flows through me. I guess that's what it is, mm-hmm. right? But because my work touches so many different areas, I sort of feel like I have an understanding of like the general mood of what's happening in a particular era.
Yeah, I mean, I think just saying like all these different touch points, and I'm actually curious, I would say the past 20, 15 years, there was like this, there's this wave of genre blurring really happening where music, fashion, art, street, sports, it all comes together and blurs. And I think you're a great, I think, representation of that as well, because there's so many different fields coming together. How did that come about, and where is this going?
To some degree, I think that's always existed, maybe not as widely viewed in popular culture. But, you know, even if we go back to, I don't know, the 60s, you know, Velvet Underground and Warhol and like that whole intersection, you know, through to the 90s with the intersection of music and art in downtown New York with Keith Haring and Basquiat and Warhol and like CBGB and Madonna and like that whole kind of 80s New York era. I think that, you know, there's been a couple of key figures who have focused on blurring that. And really it was out of an interest in, for all of us, creating things that we wanted to see. And I don't think that we distinguished those boundaries. You know, somebody else that I could think of that really was a pioneer with that was Virgil Abloh, who really, it wasn't even a mission that he set out to do. He just made the things that he wanted to make. And sometimes they were in music and sometimes they were in fashion or furniture or architecture or jewelry. It wasn't so much an intention, and it was more like a result of his multifaceted interests.
Yeah, I mean, you were very close with Virgil, and obviously music played a big role in his life too, also coming from a DJ world. And I think technology plays a big role in that as well, where it made it easier over the past few years to kind of swirl around between the different worlds and be, yeah, it's a blank canvas. Let's just throw all kinds of things at a wall and see what sticks and what works. Rest in peace to our friend Virgil. Over the years, did you have like a highlight with him, like a beautiful moment?
We met each other in a curious, funny way. This would have been like 2010 or 2011. At that time, this was before Off-White. It was even before Pyrex. and he was working for Kanye West. And he cold called the studio. And at that time, it was like a landline in the studio. And, you know, asked to speak with me, told me who he was. You know, he was a kind of creative director for Kanye West. And he asked if I would come meet with him and Kanye about working on some stage design. So I went down. Kanye was playing a show. I think it was in Atlantic City. And had, you know, I was a big, still am a big Kanye West fan. And basically had this meeting with him backstage before the show.
Oh, wow.
I remember I walked into the room and he was getting a haircut. And he basically got a haircut for like the entire hour meeting that we had there. For a number of reasons, I ended up not working on that stage design. Kanye's I think a very genius creator, but also a very difficult person to work with. So I politely declined that project. But I continued to stay friendly with Virgil, and turned out that he knew a lot of people that I knew in New York. And, you know, we continued to collaborate together. He wrote the introduction for the major publication that Fiden produced about my work in 2016. And, you know, worked on a couple of collaborative projects together as well.
Favorite Kanye track that I was playing at that concert, remember?
That was like...
What was it?
Which
Watch
album?
The Throne?
I think it was
period?
Like
a pre.
I think
the
it
Throne.
Was before Watch the Throne. I think it was like my beautiful dark twisted fantasy universe, or maybe it was. I just remember the stage design. You know, I'm such a visual person. The stage design was this giant white psych with projections of like snow capped mountains, and it was a very like Virgil.
Was that Willow already working on that
universe? Maybe. No, it wasn't Willow. This was literally Virgil designed all of that stuff.
Wow. Okay.
The stage design that Kanye wanted me to work on was for, it was the one with the mountain. Yeah.
Oh,
I think it was Yeezus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's that period?
To all my second stream bitches, try and get a baby, try and get a baby. Now you talking crazy. I don't give a damn if you used to talk to Jay-Z. He ain't with you and Beyonce need to stop acting lazy. She Instagram herself like bad bitch alert. He Instagram his watch like mad rich alert. He only wanna see that ass in reverse. $2,000 bag with no cash in your purse. Now you sitting courtside, wifey on the other side. Gotta keep them separated, I call that apartheid. Then she said she pregnantated, that's the night your heart died. Then you gotta go into your girl and report that. Main reason cause your bastard said you can't abort that. Now your driver say that new Benz, you can't afford that. All that cocaine on the table, you can't snort that. That going to that, all that money that the court got. On and on the alimony, yeah, yeah, she got you, homie, yeah. Till death, but do your part,
Well, you've also been appointed creative director for the Cavaliers. Congratulations. That must be fun. How does one approach something like that? Like what's your vision? Where do you want to take it?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I've been a fan of basketball my whole life. I was born in Cleveland, Ohio. All right. And the family that owns the Cavaliers are art collectors. So they had acquired a number of my works. And when they renovated the arena, they asked me to create a significant artwork to go in the lobby. And it's this piece that looks like a basketball has kind of hit the wall and it's pulling the wall behind it, almost like stretching. The wall was kind of fabric. And the piece got a great reaction from the fans. And at some point, Grant Gilbert, who's Dan's son, I started making suggestions about things related to the team, you know, like, oh, the jerseys, can you guys, they don't look great this year. What about this court design? And at some point, you know, Grant sort of said, like, what if you came on board and actually like helped us with that? And at the time, there was no creative director roles within the NBA. It just didn't exist. So I was effectively the first creative director for any team in the league. And especially having a viewpoint that's obviously
outside of sports,
familiar with basketball, but outside of basketball. You know, basketball teams, especially I find for some of the smaller cities, they kind of represent the city itself. And Cleveland is such a sports town, you know, with the football team, the Browns, and baseball and basketball. So it's been a really interesting project. You know, we just unveiled about 2 weeks ago an entirely new logo that I designed for the team.
Wow.
So this was a little bit of a nerve-wracking enterprise.
The pressure must be immense because you have so many people in the way you
directly
influence it.
Exactly. But it was really well received. And I think part of the reason for that when I looked at creating a new design, I actually looked to the heritage of all of the steps that the team has gone through since the 70s in terms of graphic design ethos. And so the new logo, even though it's fresh and new, it combines elements of things that we had in the past. So I think when fans looked at it, they sort of thought like, oh, have I seen this logo before? Even though it's entirely new, it combined elements from things in the past.
If you would have started that role while LeBron was still there, would have that influenced your design a little bit?
I don't know. I mean, I think, you know, I've had engagement with a number of the players on our current roster who, you know, they're certainly interested in art. I think they've become more interested in it because of my interaction with them. You know, I've met LeBron on a number of occasions, specifically where he overlaps with the fashion universe, and we have a number of friends in common. I think if he would have been present on the team, he would have had much more to say about the design than our players currently.
And I think that's also, you're saying, the role of the creative director in sports in that sense didn't exist, which is kind of crazy if you think about it, because the merch itself is a big revenue stream. And at the end of the day, it's the same people who buy a jersey are also the ones who buy a sneaker at Foot Locker, for instance, yes. Right? So to kind of think of it just as a sports jersey rather than actually an item that you can, like a fashion item, a statement, you know,
yeah.
I think it's very smart. And do you think this is where most of the sports teams are now heading?
Well, since my appointment, it was early 2020.
Yeah.
Don C has been appointed the creative director of the Chicago Bulls.
There you go.
Ronnie Feig from Kith has worked with the Knicks.
There you go.
You know, I think it can be a thing for the league. And certainly we've looked at the increase in following for the team. And we're obviously a smaller, mid-market team. But our following has increased more than any other team in the league over that time period. And I think a big part of that has to do with our intersection with culture, both in Cleveland and globally.
Yeah, I think that's in any sports. I think this is where it's probably most likely going to head, but yes. Also have like cause waves around the world, because this will happen probably in football. Well, I actually kind of did already with Jordan and PSG, right?
Yep.
The Nike Air Jordan collab. What's the soundtrack of Cavaliers? Did you think about that? Is that part of your creative direction?
To a degree. I mean, you know, they were certainly aware that I worked with Gunna on this last album. And so we used a couple of his tracks, you know, at the beginning of the game, creating energy and build up. But basically the way that I describe my role there is I'm responsible for everything visual that the team produces, which means all of the graphics, the design of the courts, the design of the jerseys, all of our social media graphics, basically anything that doesn't have to do directly with basketball on court stuff. Even though I'd definitely be yelling from the sidelines.
You'll make your designs worse if you don't play better. Yeah. How much time do you have to spend between being an artist in that field in your studio and creative director and all these other endeavors you have?
I mean, you know, I have for a long time worked in many different mediums and collaborated with many different entities. And I just go to the studio every day, get there at 9. I'm usually there till 6. And many different projects, you know, come through. And in some ways, they all feel quite similar. It's true also of this new project, Objects for Life, which is a clothing company that I'm launching. In some ways, the medium is different, but the outlook is quite similar.
I recently saw your great show at Koenig in Berlin. I think we missed each other by a day or something.
Yes.
Congrats. Of course, in that space, it looked also fantastic. It fit.
The scale.
Right,
yes.
The scale. And of course, Pokemon plays a role in your life. What's your favorite Pokemon character? And do you collect the cards as well? Do you have very valuable cards?
Yeah, I do have a couple of very valuable cards. So that story came about because I created a sculpture that was based on Pikachu. And it was in an exhibition in Japan. Somebody from the company, from Pokemon Company, saw it and got in touch with the gallery and asked if I would like to meet with them. They had never collaborated with an artist directly, and they've never licensed ever their IP to any artist. So I was the first and only.
I love that you're always the first in these fields. I mean, kudos to you, man.
You know, it's because I'm pushing into areas that nobody really thought to enter before. I mean, the basketball thing, you know, one of the reasons why it took so long to get through was literally just for the NBA, the league itself, to figure out like what was my position. How do you situate that within like the kind of hierarchy of how things work, right, in the league? And the league is interesting also because the individual teams are responsible for their own design and everything, but the league is kind of owns everything. So all that needs to be approved, all of the jersey designs, we design them, then they go to the league and then they go to Nike. It's a whole process.
And it's difficult if you're trying to be irresponsible, right?
Yeah. So, you know, with Pokemon, I was able to kind of use all of the different characters, and we actually created an animation together, which used a style of animation that was really present from like the early 2000s, like hand-drawn. Mm. You know, probably my favorite Pokemon is Cubone, which is this very unique Pokemon.
Love it. I think it's genius that you managed to create these markets for yourself as well. Very smart. Well, from all these endeavors, was like one moment, like life moment that you will always forever cherish and never forget? From your exhibitions to all these side hustles or side part of your hustle?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, my children, I have 2 boys, 9 and 5, who often intersect heavily with the type of work that I do, right? Mm. So they're, of course, they are also interested in Pokemon and they love basketball. And so the thing with the Cavs has been interesting, you know, being at a game with them was obviously, you know, amazing. They love cars, and I've done a lot of projects with Porsche. And so they start to see that I've created this potential within my workflow to just engage the things that I love. And I think that creates a kind of a magical possibility for them as well.
And you don't do these active outreach. You just put your work out and then, for instance, brands or the worlds come to you?
It's a mix. I would say generally it's brands coming to me. Mm. And so 98% of what comes isn't not the right fit. It has to, number one, be something that I'm already interested in or that I already engage with. And number two, the company has to be full of people who are willing to go where I want to take it. And usually you can tell quite quickly whether they're willing to do that or not.
What have you recently discovered in music, art, film that caught your attention?
You know, I've been going back a lot and watching like older stuff, a lot of television shows. Let's think, what was a recent movie? I recently went back and watched this movie, Le Grand Bleu.
Oh, yeah.
Big Blue, which is a Luc Besson movie. Gotta be from like the 80s or early 90s, probably. Magical, like really incredible, powerful film. I love all the new Star Wars television shows that are coming out, and I've been watching those, you know, with my children. And in music, I don't know, I learned so much from like friends of mine. And usually, like, I'm the type of person where I'll learn about some new music or I'll focus on something and I'll literally just listen to that on repeat for like 2 or 3 weeks. And then I'm like done with it. So if I looked at my phone, I think the last two things that I've been listening to heavily, Burna Boy.
Yeah, I love Burna Boy. Yeah.
Obama. I dey try to buy moto, one Toyota Corolla. My feelings been dey swing like Django Lover. Feelings been dey swing like Django Lover. Now you crash your Ferrari for Lekki Bona. Now some money remain could have been all over. My feelings still dey swing like Django Lover. Feelings still dey swing like Timbanika.
I don't know, something about that. It's also like we're getting into summer in New York, and like it feels like the right moment for that kind
of
vibe.
Afrobeats, yeah. To go slightly more intimate, what's your go-to falling in love or heartbreak song?
Running Up That Hill, Kate Bush.
You
or like some Sade. Can't go wrong with that.
Yeah. Should work with her.
She's amazing. Yeah. I went to a concert recently. This made me think of Sade because my friend Snow Allegra often gets, you know, associated or compared with Sade. And there was like something where I was talking to her about it and she was, you know, she said something like, it's flattering, but she's like, I don't like it because it makes me feel like I'm trying to like fill these other shoes when I don't even feel like I can enter that. But she played she's just been on tour and I went to see a show of hers at Radio City Music Hall.
Oh, wow.
And it was honestly amazing. And the way that she had the audience fucking going, it was honestly one of the most like powerful in terms of her relationship with the audience. Everyone knows every single word.
Wow.
As soon as like a few bars come in, they're already standing up. It was like, yeah, full energy.
What track should we play up for us?
The new song, the new album is something like Violet Skies, right? There's a track on there called Tangerine Dream, which is really beautiful. You were supposed to be my tangerine dream. The other person that I've been listening to a lot is Dave, Santan, Dave. Oh. And I had this very strange coincidence with him. It was actually when I was here in London in the fall. He saw that I was here and I didn't know that he was like a fan of mine. And so he hits me on Instagram and he's like, I see you're in London. I would love to meet up with you. Then it turns out like he owns like a ton of my work. And he like never told me that, you know? I was like, man, I'm such a big fan. Well, he'd been buying it from the gallery, but he bought it through an advisor. So nobody knew that it was him who bought it. He's somebody else who you see him in a show. He's an incredible performer, engaged the audience so much. And so I saw him perform here in London. This was last year. And then I was recently at a show of his in New York and he's playing the guitar in the show. And I was like, wow, Dave, I didn't know that you played guitar. Like I knew he played piano. And he's like, oh, I spent the last 6 months every day literally with an instructor and motherfucker learned how to play guitar, like ripped it on stage. And after the show, I went backstage and he was there with this guitar instructor and he legit got this guitar instructor, brought him everywhere that he went for the past 6 months and basically learned how to play guitar.
That's amazing.
In 6 months.
That's called dedication.
Dedication to the craft. Yeah.
6 months playing on stage. Respect. For the ones who want to learn the instrument, pick it up. Just got to do it.
Yeah.
It's hard to hate on the truth. I'm living enough, man. Hate with the lies instead. Counting cash with a phone to my ear. I feel like Meek on a private jet. Life or death. 5-5 eyes, fires, potential wifey. In the street, respected highly. In the street, protected. I do know my man, but I don't trust him. Trust that bees in the trap. Disgusting. Stick with a stick. PVA, PDA. Kiss that in public. South London, why I made myself. South London's where I made my first 100 elastic bands, plastic bags, two in a blue like cheese and onion. In Jamaica, quick vacation, traveling my pastime. Enough pollution in the ends, I flew back York, I wanna see starlight. Eritrean skin tone cinnamon, I think I found my princess. My empress still gonna impress. I know them man talking a kid, but it's hard to hate on the truth. I'm living enough, men hate with the lies instead. Counting cash with a phone to my ear. I feel like Meek on a private jet. Life or death, 5-5 eyes, fires, potential wifey. In the street, respected highly. In the street, protected. Any girl that I'm dating knows bags that I buy come filled with 50s. She a 10 out of 10 on a bad day. Public affection, I tell her come kiss me. I like mine obsessed, clingy. If she don't miss me, miss me.
What's the sexiest song?
I mean, we talked about Sade before. It's like anytime you hear any of that, it's, I don't know. It also brings me back. It's bizarre that album it's timeless, but it's also, you could listen to it 1,000 times and it doesn't get boring or old. Yeah. I don't know what it is within it, but that's an album. Even her, you know, greatest hits, I'll just put that on like a Saturday morning and like, that's it. I don't even...
You don't have to worry about anything.
I don't even need anything else here.
I was the sound of the shore.
Well, to wrap up our little chat, if your life would be a movie, your documentary about your life and your work, what song would play in the end credits?
I don't know, probably some like John Williams track, you know, yeah. like I don't know, Back to the Future soundtrack or something like that.
that.
It's so funny because my son, the older one who's 9, you know, they don't have phones or anything like that, but he has his iPad. And so he's on text message with me now sometimes. And he does this thing where he'll send me music, and most of what he sends me are music, like soundtracks from movies or television shows or things like this.
I mean,
and I think he's just into that idea that the music of film creates such an ambiance and like a vibe around something. So he's constantly sending me like John Williams, Star Wars.
YouTube clips.
Yeah.
I love
that. No, just the music from, he'll go into the songs in iTunes. And there's a way, you know, you can share a song with somebody like that, and it'll be like the Imperial March from Star Wars or something like that.
But he's already seeing how sound and the visual goes hand in hand.
Absolutely.
And, or just the audio can create the visuals in your head. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, he got it from his papa.
Yes.
Well, Danny, it's been a real pleasure. Welcome, and thanks for being on air with us.
Thank you so much. My pleasure.
Thank you for tuning in this week. If you want to listen to the full playlist, visit areweonair.com or our Spotify channel. You can also find us on Instagram and on YouTube at areweonair. And a big thank you to my wonderful team at Studio Noi. I'm Armand Nafei, and I'll speak to you soon.